right, y'all. Get ready for another edition of News and Trends with your hosts, Dave and Lynn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to News and Trends with Dave and Lynn. I am one of your hosts, Mr. David Coker, proprietor of Dave Mark Inc., promoter, marketing specialist, all-around good guy, and I'm hanging out with my partner, Mr. Leonard Young. What's going on, guy?
Hey, everything's good. This is Leonard Young, CEO of National Black Guide, DelawareBlack.com, black media specialist, and all-around good guy. David, how are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. I'm making it through. And, you know, we got through the weekend. It was a busy weekend. I know you had a busy weekend. I know you were
oh, yeah.
You were flooding the weekend activities, weren't you?
Yeah, definitely. We had people in town and events to go to, birthdays. We went fishing. So I'm exhausted.
Yeah, well. That's what the daddies do, man. That's what you gotta do. You gotta be daddy to the children. You gotta be daddy to the mommy. You gotta do everything, man.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Uncle Dave to come over and kind of make it do what it do.
Well, you had too many people over there this weekend. I couldn't come hang out with you guys this weekend,
yeah,
man.
It was just too many people
over there. Yeah. So even though you live in a 4-story house and you got 13 bedrooms. I know that you probably had every one of them full. So I said, no, I'm not.
Yeah, we were doubled up.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, not doubled up, but everybody had their own rooms.
Each family had their own room. So, I mean, it was like, there was like three or four in a room.
Yeah, well, you got a mansion. That's what you do.
Okay, I'm about to say Omar, but we ain't bring him on yet. Audience, don't listen to Dave. Don't listen to Dave.
Anyway, well, I'm glad to know that you made it through the weekend. I didn't do too much. I didn't have an exciting weekend like you did. I had to work for a living, and, I work hard, man. I had to work Saturday. I work, man. I work. I go to work. I'm like Big Daddy Kane, man. Don't even get me started. So,
sir, actually, that was Kumo D. But I'm gonna let you slide. I'm gonna let you slide
right,
on that one.
You're right. You got me. It was Kumo D. That's right. Okay. All right. But I'm like Big Daddy Kane. Okay. I'm just gonna
say. Smooth operator.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a smooth operator. There you go. You know about that.
What is a black and nasty?
You surprise me every now and then. You surprise me every now and then.
I'm just saying, I used to be a hardcore Kumo D, Big Daddy Kane. I was like, hold up, Big Daddy Kane. I was like, no.
No, yeah, you're right. You got me on that one. Okay.
But you know, Dave, just real quick, I saw, Big Daddy Kane, he does a lot of tours and concerts now. He's still on point. His concerts, if you get a chance to see it anywhere or even on TV, he still got it.
On TV. He still does the damn same dance steps and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
He can still jump over, do that little where he jumps.
Yeah.
And jump over his legs and everything. Mm-hmm. Jump over his arm, when he does that little circle thing. Yeah, so I ain't mad at him at all. So, but we got our own Big Daddy on the show today. let's talk about our guest and bring him on. So why don't you read the bio, because we have a very special guest in on the show with us today, and we can't wait to talk to him. He's a friend to the show and everything. So Leonard, let's let the people know who we got.
Sure. So first, I just want to let everybody know, if you are in the Delaware area, specifically Newcastle County, and you're involved in the arts of the community, you definitely know who our guest is, Omar Rashida. He is a native of Wilmington, Delaware. He has a bachelor's degree from Wilmington University in behavioral science. He earned his master's degree in counseling from Springfield College. And over the last 2 years, he has earned his master's of social work certification and a certification as a master's life coach. He has studied at the Robert Taylor School of Acting and Modeling. He had his acting debut in James Baldwin's play, The Amen Corner, in 1999, where he played the character of Luke. In other play productions, Omar played the character of Stephen in Rhonda Graham's play, Finally in Business. He also played the character of Father in Rose Green's play, A Mother's Prayer. And he played the role of a husband in Nicole Butler's play, Crossroads of Life. Omar has written, directed, starred, and produced six plays, Family in 2001, Peace and Unity in the Hood in 2003, Isaiah Turner in 2005, Who's My Mother in 2007. Jesus, this man's been busy, Dave. From Tears to Glory, The Story of Our Lives in 2018. Omar recently completed his sixth play titled Three Men, Three Women, The Story of Six Strangers. And this is a story about three men and three women who have been chosen to participate in a group project where they discuss and share their life stories. Omar is looking to take this play on tour. In addition to play productions, Omar played roles in small budget films. He played the character of homeless man in Routes. He also played the role of pizza worker in Disgruntled Employee. He played the character of a father in A Family's Affair. Omar is best known in Delaware for being a talk show host. He began hosting, directing, and producing talk shows called Community Issue and Artists that were aired on Least Access Channels 28 and 190. In 2019, Omar founded the 501c3 nonprofit organization Showtime TV Productions, Inc. Omar and his guests discuss issues that have a profound effect on our community, as well as interviewing writers, directors, producers, visual and performing artists. And Dave, I know you remember, we were on this show about a year and a half ago. And recently too. These shows are aired on Showtime TV Productions Facebook page and on YouTube under Showtime TV Productions. Omar had recently founded Purple and Blue Entertainment. The Three Men, Three Women, The Stories of Six Strangers is the first production of Purple and Blue Entertainment. Omar enjoys physical fitness. He earned his black belt in Goju Ryu in 2009. So Dave, he's not one to be messed with, okay? And then he's also a certified Zumba instructor, as well as being a current student in Les Mills Body Combat. So we would like to welcome to the show one of both of our friends, Omar Rashida. Did I say the last name right?
Yeah, you said it right. Thank you. Okay, thank you for being a guest. Thank you. Sure. It's truly an honor, man, being interviewed by two icons. Man, I feel so blessed.
Well, Omar, I can definitely say, reading this bio, you are the icon, sir. Because I'm like, Jesus.
And look, and I'm just going to say, I bow down to you because I don't want you to beat me up. So, you know, I don't want to get beat up by Omar Rashida. Oh, so man. I'm going to call him Mr. Omar from now on. That's what I'm going to do. You know, and then every time you say something, I'm going to say, show up. That's what I'm going to say. you know, so, but it's really a pleasure. I'm so glad that you got a chance to come on and actually come and hang out with me and Leonard, because, you know, the relationship that we have off camera and so forth is a great relationship, and you have had us on your show so many times,
multiple times,
you know, independently and together, you know. So, and we really appreciate anytime, you know, we call on you, you right there for us, and so we, you know, we always definitely want to be there for you whenever we can. So, but tonight, we're going to do something a little bit different, because we're going to put you on the hot seat tonight. You know, we want to talk about you tonight instead of you talking about us and, you know, doing what you normally do. So, but we, first of all, want to say, it's so good to hear that you're writing again and that you have a new stage play out. Now tell us a little bit about this play.
Yes. You know, actually, originally, yes, it's called Three Men, Three Women, The Stories of Six Strangers. But originally, when I first written the play, it was called Six Black Men. But what happened was I had a hard time finding a total of six black, well, actually maybe a little bit more black men. So I had to make a quick decision and change it to Three Men, Three Women, because I was able to find at least three men, you know, including myself, because I'm an actor as well, and then a couple of different women. So it's a story about six strangers who live in Los Angeles, California. They were selected to participate in a culture awareness group. I think it's called the African-American culture group. And they come together and they share their personal stories about issues that affect their personal lives. And they offer support for one another in regards to trying to deal with the challenge they're facing in their life. It's more like a play that's some interaction, but it's more monologues as each character share their personal stories. So I guess I can say that the play is going to be Saturday, August 27th, at 7 p.m. at the Wilmington Drama League. I really enjoyed the play. We got a diverse cast. The youngest, we have a little boy who's 10 years old. Then the oldest, I think one of them's in their 70s. I'm leaving that. But we have, you know, the first cast in terms of age. We really get along, really great. I have two females who are originally from New York, who reside here in Delaware. They're the assistant manager and stage manager. So, it's great. I definitely enjoy the play.
Yep. So Omar, so I guess with your plays in general, like, where do you get your inspiration from? Like, would you say you're more of a like writing play from like real life experiences or people close to you? Or do you see stuff on TV and be like, hey, that's a good idea? Or, you know, where do you get the ideas from for some of your plays?
Yes. You know, actually, you know, it's more like real life situations. You know, being working in the social service field, I, you know, currently work with adults with mental disabilities, as well as substance abuse disorders. And then just being an African-American, looking at situations that we have to face since being in this country, you look at the history of African-Americans, like, you know, those who were involved in the civil rights movement, the human rights movement, the Black Panther Party, what have you. So I, you know, bring characters together who, basically, maybe I went through the struggle or who are going through different scenarios. For example, there's one character who's going through the loss of a deep family member. There's another character who plays, which is me, who plays a street guy, had a prison background, was violent in the past. So, I mean, I really enjoy playing that part. And we have a yeah, because, you know, it's good playing someone that's totally
that's opposite. That's yeah. Totally opposite of you. Yeah.
So I get fun. We have a character. I wrote characters in the past who were like the OGs, the community. You know, that they've been around. They dealt with the civil rights movement. They dealt with racism and discrimination, and they're teaching the younger generation, you know, about their history and what to do, what not to do in life. So I would say that it's more like serious situations that I deal with my plays. I mean, I love doing productions where the audience get angry at the character. I love doing productions where the audience cry, because it's easy for them to laugh. You know, you can say something similar and they'll laugh. But I mean, you gotta have laughter and entertainment. So I have all emotions. But when you get an audience member to cry or get angry, they either can identify with that. They may be that person, or they know somebody that's that person. So they're taking it personal. So if I can get the audience member to cry or get angry, man, that's I'd rather have that much more than the laughter, if that makes sense.
So like when you play some of your when you're playing some of the characters in stage plays that you have written, do you like to be that character that makes them like cry or angry, or, you know, you just, or, you know, whoever, however it comes about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Cause I mean, the part that I got now, I do that. I mean, some of the parts in the past, I've done that. See, and one of the reasons why I act in my plays, because I learned early on when I first got into acting, well, you know, went to Robert Taylor School of Acting and Modeling, which you said back in 98 and 99, I had my debut. acting career, the A-Man's Corner, James Baldwin, at the Christina Cultural Arts Center, which is a historical cultural arts center in the city of Wilmington, Delaware. And one of the things I learned real quick as African Americans that there's a limited amount of roles. You might got Idris Elba and Denzel Washington and Will Smith and Chris Tucker, Chris Rock, Kevin Hart auditioning for maybe one or two parts. And all those guys are leading materials. So instead of waiting for someone to write a part for me, I decided to write a part for myself, you know. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to take the initiative because I don't want no one to control my career in terms of acting. I want to control myself. I want to write for myself and give others opportunities, maybe because, like I said, there are those, you know, African Americans and other minority groups who may have to battle for or audition for, you know, one part. And you got eight people trying to get that one role. So I think the more stories that we tell, I think it's very significant that we tell our own stories. You know, do your research, get your facts together, interview people. So my satisfaction in writing is to give myself an opportunity as well as other African-American actors and actresses an opportunity. But yes, I mean, I love making people cry. Because if you're an actor and you can make someone cry and get angry, you did your part. Let me give you an example. My first play, Family, which was 2001, there was a brother who played a character of an abusive husband. He would beat his wife. You know, she was a victim of domestic violence. And when we did the roll call, when he came out, the audience booed him, right? And so he said, they booed me, man. I tried my best and all that. He said, nah, man, you did your job. You were the abusive husband that made the audience get angry at you.
Right.
They weren't booing your poor, not booing you for a poor performance. They booed you because you played that role to the highest level degree. You know, so yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because some of the biggest actors, you know, they talk about how when they play certain roles that are considered to be negative type roles or whatever the case. Well, look at Denzel in Training Day.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
and he got the Oscar for that for that role that he played, but he said he took so much grief playing that type of character because it was a step away from all the characters that people had seen him in at that point, you know. And because when you're doing a great job at your craft, acting, directing, whatever, okay, and you get people to buy into what you're doing, who you are, all of those things, then you have done your job. Right, you have done what you set out to do. And that's important because nowadays, especially because people have phones and they're ready to click the button any moment, if you follow what I'm saying. So, you know, you could be the funniest guy in the world. You could be a Dave Chappelle. You could be a Chris. Well, hey, no better example than Oscar night. What happened Oscar night when that moment happened?
Right.
You know, look, what was so crazy was the fact that when it happened, Leonard, to tell you, me and Leonard was on the phone. Me and Leonard was going back and forth. Did you see that? Was that real? You know, we were going.
Yeah, that's myself. The same reason I posted on Facebook. Was that real or was that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. All of us started posting on Facebook. Remember, all of us started getting on Facebook, and everybody was trying to figure out was it real because the moment. And the actions from the actors and everything, you know, the people, when you're in a movie theater and you're watching something in the movies and you're checking out the reactions of everybody, that's why they said, what you call him? I was reading an article about Jordan Peele. That's why this latest movie, Nope, he titled it that way because of the reaction of people when they're in the movies watching a scary picture and you hear people say, oh, nope, I ain't going in there.
Right.
You know, that type of thing, you know. So, and that's the reaction that you want because you want people to buy in into what you're doing. And if you do that right, you got them. But that's what Tyler Perry's done for years. That's what Tyler Perry did for years with those plays that he did. He got those audiences to buy into what he was doing, you know, and that made all the difference in the world. So, you know, Omar Perry, when you start doing your thing, I mean, Omar, I'm sorry, you know, it slipped out, I'm sorry. when you take your play on the road, you know, and you get people and you get the reaction of people and that type of thing. That's what's going to, that's the reactions that you're going to be looking for. But I did want to ask this question and kind of moving around that. You are a man of many talents, writing, acting, producing, directing, interviewing, to name a few. What is your favorite thing to do? And which of these things drive you the most?
That's a great question. Well, you know, I often think about that question, but I really, really, really love the acting and theater. I like theater more than film right now because theater, you get to hear and see the audience reaction right then and there. I mean, it'll bring your acting to another level. If you say something that the audience will laugh at, that boosts your confidence. If you say something, and it's more disciplined being on theater, because in theater, you got to flow. Even if you mess up, you can't stop. You gotta
go. Right.
See, because in film, you mess up. Okay, cut. You get second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth chances. But in theater, you mess up, you got to keep it going. And the person that you're doing the line with, they got to keep going with you. I mean, see, as long as you get that last cue sentence to bring them on for their next line, everything's it's going to be okay, because the audience may not know the audience may not know your script. They might not know your line. So even if you do mess up, more than likely that they're not going to go. But I've done theater and television around the same time. I really love interviewing, but it's neck and neck, Dave. It really is. But I've done talk show hosts for a minute now, but I really would love to take the play on the road where I want to perform in other cities. I want to go on Broadway. I mean, I even thought about, you know, taking a play to like Africa or France or Italy, somewhere outside of Delaware, outside of the United States, because you only live once, so you got to be the best individual that you possibly can be. But I'm gonna give a slight edge to, but right now I'm gonna give it to theater.
So Omar, with your plays, so I know you talked about some of your goals, you know, going on tour nationally, Broadway, out of the country. Do you have are there any other goals you have? Like would you ever want to I always think about how Tyler Perry, I think he said that he put his plays on CDs and tapes and all that and was selling them. Like would you want to have your like a live stage play? I guess on TV or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, because it kind of reminded me of when we had The Wiz. I don't know if you guys saw The Wiz. Man, it might have been like 6-7 years ago where they did a live performance on television. It might have even been NBC.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And that's what I want to do. In addition to that, I mean, I wouldn't mind, in one of my plays, Tears of Glory, Stories of Our Lives, the play before this current play, I've written a movie script for it. However, I have to rewrite it because it's not in the correct format. But I would like to do turn one of my plays into a movie or even television series. Like on Netflix or ABC. So absolutely, you know, it goes far beyond the stage. Like I said, film. I would like to put my hat in the ring for film. I don't have too much film experience, but you got to grow in life. So
you got to start somewhere.
Well,
think about it. And you heard our last show with Mr. Dave Woolley on it. Right. And you know Dave directed a documentary on Dion Warwick.
Right.
What did he tell us, Leonard? He had never been behind a camera before. Yep,
that was his first time.
Oh, really? Wow.
And he was the producer and only producer of this documentary. Wow. And got a few awards that came his way. Won a couple film festivals with it, and now it's going to be on CNN. And this is the first time out. But yeah. But this guy, you know, this is what he does. But he's a very, when you talk to him and you talk and you listen to his drive, just like yours, because we hear it in your voice too. Because this is just sixth play. This is and this one, I can hear the passion in what you have to say about it, because I know you really believe in this one to be the one that you really want to take out there and do some things with. Right now, the stories that are being told are you know, as far as the movies, as far as plays and so forth, all seem to center around this type of thing. And especially because of, you know, the last 5 to 10 years with all that's going on in the world, especially with Blacks and minorities, you know, it would be, this is the perfect play to take out there and do something with. So I can see why you would want to take this one out and try to make it happen. And I have a feeling that that's exactly what you're going to do, no matter how big the place may be, because it only takes a couple good reviews to get where you want to get. You know what I mean? Even if it's off Broadway down the street, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you see them theaters, those theaters, like, I love Broadway. I'm actually a person. I'm a play person.
Okay. I go to play. Gotcha.
You know, so I've been to Broadway many times. I make a trip to, my favorite place to go to is Sight and Sound up in Lancaster. I don't know if you've ever been there. No, yeah, but those plays are really awesome. And so when you go to see a play, what I love about the experience of a play is the fact that you have to use your imagination. Mm-hmm. And you got to put yourself in the situation. So when you have the monologues and dialogues that people are talking about or people are acting out, you have to be able to see everything that they're talking about. Right. In order to buy in. And most people who go to the theater, they do that. Mm-hmm. And that's what they go there for, is to try to see what the playwright is seeing.
Okay? I'm sorry, you finished?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
One of the things that I really love about, you know, writing plays, especially this one, is when you write the character and when you go to rehearsals, and you see the actors and actresses play out that character, man, it's just an awesome feeling. It is awesome to see what you wrote come to life. And then one of the amazing things, in addition to that, is that the creativity that the actors and actresses bring to that character. I mean, they may, you know, do some improv-ing and bring up things that you didn't write, but it's like, man, okay, this goes right along with it. They make the character even more creative, you know, with their energy, their spirit, and their acting experience. It's just an amazing feeling.
Yeah, well, I could see that, because, you know, I sat in on one of your practices and I could see what you're talking about in reference to seeing the actors go through what they go through and turning themselves. Oh, actually, I've been to one of your the Isaiah play. I was at one of the rehearsals for that as well. So. So I see the actors and what they go through to transform themselves into the people they need to be. Speaking of transforming themselves, I wanted to ask a question, kind of flipping to one of your other hats right quick. Now, you started your Showtime. You know, of course, you've been on TV and all of this stuff, production and all this stuff for years. But, you know, this whole Showtime thing that you started now, and now you got another entity under that, you know, what is it, Blue and Purple, you said?
Purple and Blue Entertainment.
Blue and Purple Entertainment.
It's brand new. It's a baby. Like I said, the first production is, you know, with this play here, August 27th. So okay. it is brand new. So this is going to be the first production.
So with you taking, when you taking, and now you launch this other entity of yours. So it sounds to me like you have a certain direction that you're heading in with everything. Talk to us about that.
Oh yeah, like I said, Purple and Blue Productions, basically, Purple and Blue Entertainment is basically, you know, to get the play started. Like I said, taking on tour, get some producers to help, you know, with that in regards to taking the play to the highest level it can go. Showtime TV is a 501c3 nonprofit. Basically, you know, for my television, just talk about my television history. I started off on Channel 28, of course, and both of you gentlemen have been on there. It's the least access channel. It's the local channel that we news on. You saw some very good, fascinating programs. Then in 2019, there was a change in Title 28. City Council and the Cable Communications Committee at the Wilmington City Council building decided to make a change. They decided to that LAPA was no longer like a good for Channel 28, if you will. And so they voted in another production in. So as of April of 2019, that was the last time that many of us had our shows on Channel 28. And so we did Channel 190 for about a year or two. And then I just switched to just doing Zoom, Facebook Live. One of the things I learned about talk show hosting is that social media is big now. You can grow your show on Zoom. You can grow it on Facebook and some of the other social media outlets. And one of the things I really love about it is that I can interview people from all over the world, all over the United States of America. So in terms of my goal that you mentioned, it's to continue to network. It's to continue to interview people from all over, talk about serious issues that have a profound effect on our community, as well as to show artists, which is promote those who do entertainment, dance, music, spoken word. I really love meeting other artists because when you have a passion for the arts, you sweat blood and tears, you really know what others are really going through. So television and theater and film is just something that I really like to do on a full-time basis. Like I said, I've been in the social work field for quite some time now. And now it's time for me to do a career change. It's time for me to really do my love and passion. And that's to do television and theater, which will give me opportunities to even network with people even more, meet other artists, and to, you know, get out of Delaware, you know, go to New York, as you mentioned, Broadway, go to Chicago, go to Detroit, go to California, go to Atlanta, because that's a big place for plays. So it's just, for me, it's just a personal growth.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you definitely have your creative thinking hat on. So you definitely are moving in that direction. I know this may seem kind of strange and kind of weird in a way, but you mentioned the whole thing about what happened with the TV station Channel 28 and, of course, changing hands and everything. And, you know, for years you kind of were dormant, you know, trying to figure out what your next move was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I know it was very devastating for a lot of people when that happened. But it also caused you to get your creative juices on going, and to be able to move in a new direction, because as you started saying just then about how big social media is now, it gives you a chance. It gave you a chance to change up what you were doing, and now you can reach more people doing what you're doing now and be able to get more people to know you. Because I look at the guests that you have on your show now, you got guests coming from all over now, and you know, it's not just local people anymore. You know, I'm be like, who's this person? I don't know this person, you know, because, you know, me and Leonard, well, I don't know about Leonard, but me, I know a lot of the people that, you know, and so forth and so forth. And, you know, and Leonard does too. And, you know, but I'll be like, okay, let me tune in to Omar's show to see who this guy is that he's talking about, you know. It's just like, you know, we recently had Alexa Gold on the show.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't know who Alexa Gold was before we did that show, you know. I was like, okay, well, Omar's getting all these people, you know. So actually, it was kind of a mixed blessing if you look at it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, gave me opportunity, like I said, growth. And probably, you know, I mean, I even went this far if we were still on Channel 28. So sometimes God has a purpose for you. We may not always like that purpose in the beginning, but in the long run, amen. Yeah. It's time for change.
Yeah, there
it's time,
you go.
For, time for
yeah,
change.
It might take you where you want to go, man. So, yeah.
And you guys are doing the same thing with your show. As you and I were talking previously, I remember you mentioned the last week's show, Mr. Woolley. You guys are, 16, 17 states now?
Yeah. At least right now. Yep. We said not too long ago that we wanted to have listeners in 50 states. Right. And so we're close to a third of the way there.
Well, so right, yeah, and just to correct that, so we may already be there, but our stats only show us the top 16 states with right. listeners. Okay, so gotcha.
So those are the people that we know are there. Right. But that's, you know, considering how we started and the fact that, you know, we didn't know
what we were doing. We ain't know what we were doing, Omar. Basically.
We kind of took a leap of faith. We were supposed to be doing the test run, and then Letta said, well, let's not do the test run. Let's just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And we went on it and did it first show. And that was Omar. In November.
Yep. Oh, Omar, somebody got to lead the way. You know, I was like, Dave, follow me. Get on my back. I'm going to lead us to the podcast.
Okay.
Podcast promised land. Exactly.
But you know what, you two, you say you didn't know what you were doing, but I think I'm going to disagree with that 100%, because it was natural for you to. For example, Leonard has DelawareBlack.com, so you've been networking for a good minute now, and Dave is a stage manager, so both of you gentlemen are used to presenting your product to in front of people. So, I mean, it was a different format, but you had the experience in terms of networking and reaching out to others. So, I mean, it was new to you, but look how big you are. So, I mean, right. In some sense, you had to know what you were doing, because you're pretty much in almost all 50 states, if not all 50 states, or even across
this country. Well, it's funny that you say that. That's funny because, you know, Leonard and I, the reason that we decided to do the show is because when we get on, you know, Leonard and I get on the phone, or we'll get together, you know, we'll hook up or whatever, we'll hang out or whatever. We have these conversations that are just natural conversations all the time. And we talk about a number of things, right, Leonard? Like sitting, right? And so one day I just said, well, you know, we need to do a show, Leonard. You know, and we started laughing about it at first. And then all of a sudden we said, yeah, let's do a show. And so when we decided to do the show and did that first show, mm-hmm. You know, matter of fact, we had a listener that night. There was a guy who was listening.
Yeah, we had like two or three.
Two or three of them. And they were commenting on what we were saying. Right. So, of course, you know, we start feeling it, you know, oh, we got listeners now, so we're going to talk up a storm, you know. So,
that boosted your confidence up. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, but it worked out. So, you know, and then being able, you kind of helped us in a lot, because, like I said, we've dealt with you a lot over the years, and, you know, just being on your show and how you always made us feel comfortable being able to, you know, you always asked the right questions, you know, you always made sure that, you know, we felt included, and that was the key. Inclusion was definitely the key. So we really appreciate it. And we really appreciate the fact that you are who you are, because the community, especially up there in Wilmington, the community of Wilmington, Delaware, you know, is driven by people like you. And that is important, to have those type of people. I've always been a community guy. But a lot of people they might see you and they might say, yeah, that guy looks familiar. They'd be trying to figure out who you are or whatever. Right, sometimes, right. Maybe. But then when they realize who you are, they say, oh, yeah, you know, he's this, he's that. You know, I remember, you know, I've done events, you know, Kingswood, the Riverside reunion thing. Oh, yeah. I remember telling you, you were right there. As soon as I said something to you, you were right there. And I was like, okay, but this is the type of thing that makes people like you successful. So this whole thing with this play, getting this play out there, I know you're going to get somewhere outside of Delaware. I know somebody's going to take a chance on what you're doing. And it's only going to take one person, and that leads into all the other stuff. So so I think you're going to be fine. So, but we want to definitely say everyone that's listening, and you're listening to News and Trends with Dave and Len at this time, everyone that's listening, we want to say, please take a moment and he's getting ready to tell you about his social media pages and everything. Please take a moment, go to his pages. His flyer is up for the play. You might recognize some of the people in the play when you look at the flyer. Very nice flyer, you know, right? You know, it was well done. No comment. Anyway, you know, so, but that's the inside joke, though. The folks, that's the inside joke. So, but take a look at the flyer. Take a look at his, you know, when he gives you his information, you know, he's going to tell you how to get the tickets and everything. It's at the Wilmington Drama League. It's the perfect place to go see a play, people. Go see this play. You're not going to be disappointed. Go see this play. Okay. Why don't you tell them where they can get tickets and everything, Leonard, Omar.
Okay. Sure. Yes, the play, once again, as Dave mentioned, is at the Wilmington Drama League. It's 10 West Lee Boulevard, Wilmington, Delaware, 19802. The date, once again, is Saturday, August 27th, 7 p.m. sharp. Tickets are $30 general admission, cash or check only. And if you would want, you can pick up tickets there. You can purchase tickets there, but if you want to reserve tickets, you can. And my email is omarrashada@yahoo.com. Once again, that's omarrashada@yahoo.com. Once again, the tickets are $30, August 27th. 2022 at the Wilmington Drama League, 10 West Lee Boulevard, Wilmington, Delaware, 19802. It's called Three Men, Three Women, The Stories of Six Strangers.
And I'm going to add to that, if people have trouble trying to get to Omar or whatever, anybody that knows me, know how to get in touch with me, you can hit me up and I can get you in touch with them and make sure you get those tickets, okay? Also, why don't you kind of tell people when they can see your show that you have to come on?
Okay, well, generally, I do live shows on Zoom, Facebook Live on Tuesdays from 7 p.m. Now, I won't have a show this evening because I had to come on with these two big shots. So, Omar, you cannot be your show tonight. So next Tuesday, the 9th, you're going to see it. You can go under Showtime TV Productions, Inc. Facebook page and see the live show, or you can also see the show on my personal page on Facebook, which is Omar Showtime Rashida. You can also go on YouTube and look up Showtime TV Productions, Inc. Or my name in YouTube, which is Omar Rashida. Yeah, so basically, we do the live show on Tuesdays. At 7 p.m.
All right, there you have it, folks. So, you know, he's everywhere. You can find him on Facebook, all over. He's very active on Facebook too, people. So he's gonna, if you send something out there, he's definitely gonna respond. I can guarantee you. So you don't have to worry about that. So, but we're gonna go ahead and move on into our next topic with the show. And since we have Omar on here, he's hanging out with us, folks, so we're going to keep him involved in what we're talking about tonight. And this is right up your alley. I wanted to bring this next story up because, you know, we were just talking about Broadway and everything just then. And what I wanted to do, because I saw the story and I thought this was very interesting, and I'll send you the link later so you can see the whole story. I didn't send the whole story to Leonard. But I'll send you the link later. But it's a very interesting article. But I wanted to read something in reference to what this whole thing was about. It's called Broadway is Brimming with Black Playwrights, But for How Long? That's what this story is all about. And then it says, Broadway's pre-pandemic theater season featured two plays by Black writers, and one of them had been kicking around since 1981. The previous season, there was one such play, and the season before that, zero. This season, if all goes as planned, there will be at least seven plays written by Black playwrights. The sudden abundance after decades of scarcity is a response to criticism in the theater industry. Like so many others has confronted since the widespread protest over police brutality that followed last year's killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. facing scrutiny over the kinds of stories are told on stage and who makes decisions off stage. Broadway's gatekeepers have opened their doors to more Black writers, at least for the moment. So in reading this article, they are indicating playwrights and actors are getting a free pass right now when it comes to the number of Black plays, like some of the more popular ones that are on right now is Chicken and Biscuits, Passover, Trouble in Mind, Skeleton Crew, Thoughts of a Colored Man, to name a few, that are on Broadway right now because of all the racial issues we've gone through and in here in the States and all over the world over the last 5 years. So this is the backdrop to the story, because they're kind of indicating all of a sudden all these Black plays have popped up and been acceptable as far as Broadway is concerned now because of all the racial divide and everything that's going on in the United States and so forth and the world. So I had two questions in reference to what I was reading. The first one was, what do you think Broadway is trying to make? What do you think Broadway is trying to do? Are they trying to make money off of us because of the racial divide? And it's such a hot topic right now, or is this just something that it's time for at this time?
Well, it could be a combination of the both. I remember several years ago when they said Oscars was so white, you know, because people were complaining about African Americans not getting enough recognition. So maybe Broadway was in the back room saying to themselves, you know what, we better get our act together. So let's bring on some more Black plays. And then also, you know, I was thinking about this happened all last year. I was thinking to myself, and quite honestly, I said, are they bringing Black plays because it's COVID? You know, because some plays have
Because nobody's coming out.
Some plays had to cancel because all it takes is one cast member to have the COVID and the show's done.
All right.
I'm not accusing them of that, but the thought process that's in my head. But nevertheless, I mean, we should be on Broadway. We have a lot of great playwrights out there that has, you know, excellent, you know, plays, and they're doing quite well. They're getting standing ovations. So hopefully, you know, the key word that you mentioned was, is this like temporary or, you know, it's just a quick fix. And then after that, okay, see y'all, bye. No, it can't be a moment. It has to be a movement. It has to go on year after year after year after year after year after year after year, you know, open the doors. Because it was something that I was saying earlier, you know, in terms of, you know, you might got 7 to 8 African Americans going for one part. So, yeah, but to see multiple African American plays is excellent, because it's not just that one play that they are set and then the others are pushed aside. But and hopefully these other playwrights and actors from these other plays are networking, they're congratulating one another, you know, they're writing names, exchanging numbers, and maybe that they can collaborate to do other stories. So hopefully it keeps going. And hopefully I'll be there to join them.
There you go.
And Dave, one thing I was going to say too, and kind of piggybacking off of Omar, I definitely think for them it was probably preemptive, because you know what, when we're looking at the article, 1 year they had zero Black plays. So you know, if it went public that they had zero Black plays, we already know what the court of public opinion, you know, how they would feel. So, you know, I think they definitely try to get ahead of it. And, you know, even though it may have been COVID and all that, what I wonder is, will they be? Yeah. And of course, this was last year, but let's say whatever this season is, or even last year, did they market these Black plays in the same? Well, I you know, I won't say the major plays, but did they market these Black plays equally with the equivalent, you know, white plays that, you know, just kind of match this in, let's say, popularity, you know? So hopefully they didn't put them in the, okay, we got a Black play, and then just kind of let the Black plays, you know, kind of suffer on their own, or, you know, have to do all their own stuff. So I'm curious, to be honest, I'm curious how well these plays did. Cause I mean, Omar said it was COVID. And Dave, I don't know about you. I'm not a big play person, but I've never heard of any of these plays, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But, you know, I'm curious how well they did, because you would think if they had seven plays last year and they did, let's say, moderately good, even during COVID, then, you know, this year we should have seven plays or more. So those are just some of my thoughts. So, Omar, so, well, just out of curiosity, what does it take to get a play on Broadway? Like, how, like, these people who, of course, made it, what do you think they had to do? Or I'm sure you know some of the details.
Well, you know, some of the plays that I knew that were on Broadway, some of them start off as off-Broadway, you know, and then they, you know, off-Broadway is a certain amount of seats. I think it may be like under 500, and then maybe 500, 600, 700 or more is Broadway, you know. But I think, you know, having a successful run off-Broadway, as well as having producers, because let's be honest, taking the play on Broadway, we're just taking the play out period, is very experienced. It's very expensive. So, you know, and then like Dave said, in marketing, the word of mouth, reviews, having good reviews, and people want to see it here, people want to see it there, then eventually it'll continue to grow and more producers will come on and join in, which will result in it being on Broadway. So I think this, you know, starting off as a little baby, going off Broadway, and then eventually getting good reviews, and then adding on producers, you know, to help with the financial aspect of it, and then let it build from there. I mean, I think that's just one way that I see, you know, and based on observation.
So Omar, for people who don't know, including myself, can you break down off Broadway, and then what that transition is to Broadway?
Well, off-Broadway is just going to, like I said, it's just going to a theaters that may hold under, I believe, 500 seats or less.
And is that still in New York? Is that still in the New York, or it can be anywhere?
It can be anywhere. Like, for example, you know, the play that I currently have, Three Men, Three Women, The Stories of Six Strangers, Women's and Drama League, is an off-Broadway theater because it seats 260 seats. And let's say, for example, if I was going on tour, like a place like the Grand Opera House or DuPont Playhouse, a Playhouse Theater, now their seats are 1,000 or more. So if I go to DuPont Theater, 1,000 seats, Merriam Theater, 1,000 seats, and then another theater, 1,000 seats, another theater, 800 seats, then that would be considered more than Broadway. But anything that's like 260 seats, 360 seats going on tour, that's off Broadway.
Okay, so it doesn't matter where you are. So technically your play is an off-Broadway play.
Yeah, it's off-Broadway starting on, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then now, it's like for example, like one of the plays that Dave mentioned was, what was the name of the play that you
Isaiah,
mentioned?
The Isaiah play?
No. The
Chicken and Biscuit. Oh, okay. Chicken and Biscuit.
Thoughts of a Colored Man. You know, I know that man.
Okay.
I think that might have started off in Chicago with a small theater. And I think he went to Baltimore, and as time went on, he just grew, and eventually it came on Broadway because it was getting good reviews. And he had producers adding on. Matter of fact, one of his producers were one of the singers from Destiny's Child. You know, she added her name as so one of the producers because she saw it got good reviews, and she supported the brother in this play, and eventually, you know, it kept on Broadway.
Yeah, well, and that's the key, is of course getting the good reviews and being able to fill the theaters that you go to with seat fillers. You know, you got to get those people out, you know, because if a person comes to review the play, first and foremost, they're going to be looking around to see who's there. They're going to see if the people are enjoying the play. They're looking at the act, and they're looking at a number of things. And a recommendation from a good review can get you on Broadway as well.
Yeah, and then, absolutely. And then also, if you have major stars come out and see your play, like other well-known,
they want to be a part of it.
Yeah, let's say, for example, like Denzel Washington, Viola Davis or Cindy Williams, if they came out and see that play, they said, "Oh, so and so was there. So and so was there." Oh man, you know, it's really big.
Right. Well, and think about it. You know, we have another play right here, Priest Tahir. That's how he was able to get a lot of his stuff outside of Delaware, because once he took it outside of Delaware, you know, we had, you know, you had actors that saw the play, then they wanted to be involved. All of a sudden, you know, you got named people in the play, you know. I know, you know, and that's, you know, when you start getting some of the people, some of the famous people that start taking on some of these roles, that's when the money comes in, and that's when Broadway comes calling and say, "Hey,
let's get this."
Okay, yeah. You know? But, and it's just like, you know, the plays I name, I know the big ones. I know Chicken and Biscuit was a big one. Yeah. Passover is actually was the producer of Passover was my man, I had his name on the tip of my tongue. There's a picture of him in that article, Leonard. Keep going. Why can't I think of his name all of a sudden? Down. The other way. Wow, that's crazy. That's what happens when you get old, Omar. You start forgetting things. you know, keep going. Because there's a couple. The Passover is done by Blair Underwood. Blair Underwood. Okay, so Blair Underwood is the producer and the director of that one. Yeah. And then there's the play. There was another one. Was that the one? Go down one more, Leonard. The next picture. Keep going. Wow, I didn't realize it was that far down. That guy right there. What's his name?
Ruben Santiago Hudson.
Yeah, Ruben Santiago. You know, you familiar with him?
Let me see his face.
He's also an actor as well. He was in, you know what he played in? He was in American Gangster. He played what you call his right hand man, Frank Lucas's right hand man in American Gangster. Remember the guy that was always with Frank?
Yeah, I know him.
Well, he's the director of he's done a couple plays, matter of fact.
Yeah, Lackawanna Blues.
Yeah, Lackawanna. That was the play version of Lackawanna Blues, because you know that was a movie too. Yeah. So a lot of these guys, a lot of these actors are coming back, because you know, right now Broadway's been hot with a lot of mainstream actors coming back and getting on Broadway, and you know that all started really when Denzel decided to go back and do Fences, you know. And you know, of course, you know, everybody follows Denzel's lead, you know, so everybody start going back to Broadway. So, but I wanted to ask this as well. So how does this affect a playwright such as yourself who wants to be accepted by the merit of his work and not so much because the timing is right to get in with the big boys of Broadway?
Of course, you want to definitely want people to look at your play and say, man, this is fantastic. But it can be a combination of the both. You know, the merit of your work can be well-loved and performed, well-loved and appreciated. And at the same time, the timing might just be right. So, you know, it's a time and place for everything. So, you know, if time and place is an opportunity as well as the merit of the play, you know, I'm all for it.
Okay. All right. Well, it's right now, folks, you know, we need to push this play towards Broadway. You know, New York is not that far from us, so we need to push it that way, you know. You know, so we can get on the I-95 and just ride up and go hang out, you know, and watch Omar blow up, you know. Omar Perry blow up. That's what we're going to call him, Omar Perry, you know. You know, so, but you guys are listening to News and Trends with Dave and Len at the moment, and we have our guest, award-winning playwright, Mr. Omar Rashida, on with us, and we want to thank him for spending the time with us, as usual. We always like when we have guests on our show, because you guys make us relevant. You guys, you know, really bring bring the information to the table that people want to hear. So thank you for taking the time and hanging with us. Hey, Len, let's move on to that next story that we got.
Okay. All right, bring us in, Dave.
Bring us in? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Leonard and I have been talking about the Brittany Griner story for a moment now. Of course, it's from most of the people who have been not under a rock, they know that Brittany Griner was detained back in February trying to board a plane, and they found hashish oils in her bag, and she's been held since that day, that back in February, that they found it, and she's on trial right now, and they're talking about giving her 10 years. And so everybody thinks it's a big political move that they're holding her, because quite naturally, she was caught with a small amount. Now, keep in mind, countries like that have very strict, drug penalties and so forth when it comes to getting caught with drugs or whatever, no matter how small the quantity and whatever. So she's admitted that she did something wrong. She broke the law. So she's not trying to run from that. She says she had it for medicinal purposes and whatever. But right now it just hasn't been looking good, because she's been held there over 100 days, and everybody feels that she should have been released by now. Now, there's been toying with the idea of trying to use her as leverage to get a couple of political prisoners to be traded for her that the U.S. has, one of them being a guy that they called the Merchant of Death. me and Leonard's favorite guy, So.
Hey, Dave. No matter how many times you say Merchant of Death, it never sounds good.
Yeah, and this guy was like, notorious arms dealer. He was trying to blow up things here in the United States and everything, And but they want to trade her for this guy. No way that sounds like an even trade, of course. We got somebody got caught with a little bit of hashish oil, cannabis oil, for a guy that deals weapons and trying to hurt people in the United States. Something's not right there, right? But that's what they want to trade. And there's another guy there with Brittany that they're trying to get released as well. Well, this story that we're about to talk about was Trump's reaction to the whole thing, because Trump, of course, has to sound off on everything. And he had a lot to say about what this whole thing about trading Brittany for this guy. And Len, you got it queued up?
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah, we're going to play it for you guys so y'all can hear it. All right.
Okay, should be playing.
Wait, try it again. I don't hear any sound. Oh, there it is. Okay, go do it again.
You know my mouse is broken.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, here it is. Hold on. All right, I got the sound on the thing was off. Okay, y'all ready?
Omar, like I told you, it's hard to get good help, Omar.
Omar, it is. So if you know someone else I can co-host with, let me know.
For Brittany Griner and Victor Bout that Russia has put forward, where they'll trade this arms dealer's 25 years for arms dealing all over the world for the WNBA player, and also I believe a former Marine is being held there.
She went in there loaded up with drugs into a hostile territory where they're very vigilant about drugs. They don't like drugs. And she got caught. And now we're supposed to get her out. And she makes a lot of money, I guess. But we're supposed to get her out for a absolute killer. And one of the biggest arms dealers in the world. Killed many Americans, killed many people. And he's going to get a free card. And we're going to get her. She knew you don't go in there loaded up with drugs. And she admitted it. I assume she admitted it without too much force, because it is what it is. And it certainly doesn't seem like a very good trade, does it? He's an absolute one of the worst in the world, and he's going to be given his freedom because a potentially spoiled person goes into Russia loaded up with drugs.
And what do you think?
All right, well, there it is. Dave, you know, she went in there loaded up with drugs. Like, he legit made her sound like a drug dealer. An international drug dealer.
He doesn't know the story either. You could tell by the way he was talking. He didn't know the whole story.
Well, but we know that's how Trump talks about every story. Mm. So
that was crazy that he would even say that. Now the only thing I don't have, and I have to be, I'm trying to be as politically correct as possible here.
Dave, just say you agree with Trump. Just go ahead and say it.
No, the only thing I will say, I understand the whole thing about trading her for this guy who's killed many people and wants to kill people. You know what I'm saying? Mm. It just does not seem like a fair trade as far as that's concerned. But even still, Trump is so out of pocket with what he's saying in reference to Brittany Griner.
Right.
You know, Omar, what's your thoughts on this?
He called her spoiled. I mean, what makes you think she's spoiled?
Because he thinks she makes a whole bunch of money and that she was doing something stupid and stuff. It's like number 45, you've never done
right.
that?
Right.
We know a lot of stuff that you've done over the last few years, so you know.
Absolutely. Well, I would like to see her back, like many Americans. I mean, and yes, she might have a little weed, but I mean, to be locked up in another country, you don't know about her safety. I mean, she's far away from her family. It's just they're going through it, wondering if she's gonna be okay. And then people were saying on Facebook and also on social media, they were wondering, well, if that was LeBron James, they would say he'd have been home by now. So, I mean, I don't know. But my opinion is I just hope she gets a return safe back home.
Well, I'll say this, too. I watch the WNBA, so I'm familiar with a lot of their players. And there's a young lady, white lady, named Sue Bird. That's you know who Sue Bird is. Okay. Sue Bird is all-time great in the WNBA. If she was locked up over there, she probably been there 2 days. That's just how it is. I just think that Brittany, you know, being who she is, because see, Brittany did make a lot of money in Russia. The only reason she was over there in Russia is because she makes more money in Russia playing basketball than she does here. She was making over $1 million a season in Russia. Here, the most she can make here was just under $300,000.
Yeah, $250,000.
Yeah, yep. So the WNBA players don't make nowhere near the NBA players.
Man. No, not hardly. And they have to play pretty much year-round in order to make any money, you know. So that's why a lot of them go overseas and they play. And she's been going over there to that Russia team for a while. So she was like one of the most popular basketball players over there in Russia. So, and a lot of her Russian teammates have come to her defense trying to get them to release her, but they haven't done it yet. Yeah. So, and for, you know, and of course this doesn't help because now you're going to have a bunch of Trump cronies out there, you know, supporting what he just said, you know, and that's just going to make things even more messier, you know. And then you got to fear for her life because if they do this trade, what happens when she gets back here to the States?
Nothing. Dave, we already know she got to go back to playing the WNBA.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about Trump just said what he just said. If they trade her for this guy, what do you think the Trump people are going to do?
Oh, yeah. Well, we already know.
Think about it.
Well, in fact, it might be another January 6th.
Yeah. And she's going to have to go in the hide. And she's 6'7", so they ain't gonna be easy. So you know, so
well, but you know, I almost
so
feel
kind of a no-win situation. situation.
I almost feel that people are going to go harder at Biden. I mean, like I get she's involved, but you know she don't got no bargaining power. Like they're going to go hard at Biden, and I think it's going to be they love to go out. Like when Biden fell off the bike, they go in. When Biden forgets his words at press conferences, they go in.
Yeah.
So.
He's kind of in a no-win situation either because, you know, if he does do this deal and something crazy happens, oof, that's not gonna sit well either. You know what I mean?
So, I think if she does come back, it'd be with open arms. I think it'd be more people happy that she's back. And I think the WNBA would welcome her with open arms because they would probably get some pressure from the other players as far as the fans, as far as the general population. Hey, yeah, she made a mistake, but hey, give her a second chance. So I think she may have more supporters coming, if she comes back to the United States, I think she would have more supporters than non-supporters.
Oh yeah,
that won't be
a problem at all. I don't think she's going to have to worry about people supporting her because right now she has a lot. Look, you got the WNBA and the NBA that's supporting her, and that's you got the NBA guys on board. They got her initials on every court in the WNBA right now. I mean, and you got the NBA guys wearing her gear, with her likeness on it and her name on it. So right now, the support is real big. It's probably not as big as it should be because there's a lot of people who aren't talking about this story, and it should be a story that people are talking about. And like I said, you always wondered if it was somebody of another hue or color, as I'll say, whether or not, or if it was a LeBron James type caliber, somebody up there. Would they be there as long as they've been there? You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm sure
Dave, I honestly feel like no matter who it was, it wouldn't be an easy trade because even if it was LeBron, okay, they're still trading him for the arms dealer. Even if it was, the other WNBA
player. I think he would have been out prior to this. I don't think they would have tried to play that political game with him. This was calculated. I'm pretty sure they knew exactly what they were doing when they chose to watch her.
So you're saying you think the U.S. would have traded LeBron for the arms dealer?
I'm saying that I don't think there would have had to been a trade. They would have. He would have got out without a trade.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm mad to disagree with that one. Because LeBron would have been an even bigger bargaining chip.
It doesn't matter. That's the main. That's the reason that I'm saying what I'm saying. Because LeBron is LeBron. If he was Kobe or Michael back in his heyday, any of them guys. First of all, they wouldn't keep him that long because they're who they are.
I disagree on that one.
Okay, well,
if I'm Russia, I'm like, ooh, forget just the Merchant of Death. We get in the Merchant of Disaster, the Merchant of Destruction. Like, we getting all of our people out.
I don't know about all that. I just think that they picked the person that they wanted to pick. I think they the biggest fish in the pond was Brittany Griner, and that pond that they took that fish out of was already pre-scripted. I really believe that. All right, so forget what you said, partner.
Whatever. The interesting part to it too is they and I heard I didn't follow up too much, but they said that the U.S. did make the offer, and I guess they're waiting to see if Russia accepts it for the Merchant of Death for Brittany Griner and Paul Whelan. So,
right.
I'm curious if that will get accepted and if that will even go through.
But does the U.S., because they made that offer, does the U.S. look weak?
Yeah, they do. I think so.
Yeah. I do too. I think they look very weak. And I think that that's, and the Russians are probably sitting there, oh, look at them. They over there groveling and trying to get us to say, yeah, we're going to make them sweat. We're going to just wait for a little bit. And we'll answer them when we feel like it, you know. And that's what I think they're doing. That's what I really think they're doing. Oh, well, if we can get the merchant at death, maybe we can get a couple of our guys, you know, like Whalen and, you know, a couple other people, you know. And they're going to give Brittany Griner up for all these crazy people that, you know, that the U.S. has held, you know.
Didn't they make a previous exchange not too long ago?
I don't know. Okay. I don't think so. But I know there was, you know, outside of the guy that's merchant death, this other guy, Whalen, that Leonard just mentioned, was one of, he was a, he's locked up over here for espionage. He's an American, but he was working for the Russian government, you know. Okay. And, you know, we got people, and they know we got people that they're, you know, and the Russians are probably just saying, if they wanted to, they probably can give the Americans a list that said, okay, I want this person, this person, this person, this person, and then wait for them to say yes or no. And if they don't get everybody that they want, they probably won't do it. So, because they definitely say Griner could get 10 years.
Yeah, for that little crazy.
That's so crazy to me.
Yeah, but
and because she had a medical, she had a doctor's note and everything saying that she was using it for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. Yeah,
but I mean, honest, what good did that doctor note mean internationally?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's almost like saying my mother's, you know, going over another country. My mother said I could do it. My mom said I could do it.
I know when she gets back here to the States, she probably not leave the States again after that.
Well, she won't go back to Russia.
Right.
Yeah, we definitely know she ain't going back to Russia for no money. I don't care what it is. So.
And then you have to ask yourself, well, will the other countries be willing to open their arms and want to bring her in? Because of all
this? I'm sure. I'm sure they would.
Okay.
Yeah, but if it was me, I wouldn't go anywhere outside of the United States after that. Because you're a target. You're a target after that. You know, even though they might open their arms up and say, come play for us, we give you all this money to come play for us or whatever, I'd be too shell-shocked, man. I wouldn't want to do it. She might sneeze, and they're going to say, oh, there's white powder coming out your nose. What is that? You know, and that she'll get locked up for that. So I don't know. I'd be a little nervous to go anywhere after I got released from Russia too.
Yeah.
Just watching the pictures of her being led around like a dog. I mean, it's ridiculous. And she's so much bigger than everybody else. They're walking her to court with handcuffs. She has handcuffs on, and then the person leading her around has a handcuff to her handcuff and pulling her wherever. And then there's a dog, there's a person walking with a dog behind her. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, every time I see those images, man, I just cringe. And I was like, yeah, there's something wrong there. Yeah, so. But we'll be keeping an eye on the story. Leonard and I have talked about the story, about 3 or 4 times, maybe more.
Yeah, definitely. You
know, just trying to, because we've been keeping a watch on it. And just the fact that I heard that about Trump, I said, well, you know, this is something that we definitely need to bring up about, you know, because Trump, you know, he can get his crazy people stirred up and that'll be it, you know. So I'd be worried here in the United States for it. If that's the case, you know. So, but anyway, well, we want to say we've come to the end of our show, and we're going to give Omar a chance to talk about his media pages, his play again one more time, and you know, so where you guys can, how you guys get tickets in case you forgot or whatever. So, Omar, why don't you go ahead and do that and let people know, and then let them know about your TV show as well again. So.
Well, I'll start off with the TV show. Once again, it's Showtime TV Productions, Inc. You can find that on Facebook as well as YouTube. And then my name, Omar Showtime Rashada, R-A-S-H-A-D-A. I'm also on YouTube and on Facebook. The play, once again, is called Three Men, Three Women, The Stories of Six Strangers. We held at the Wilmington Drama League on Saturday, August 27th, 2022 at 7 p.m. That's 10 Wesley Boulevard. That's right across the street from former Mills and MT Bank, right next door to Cornerstone Baptist Church. So if you know any of those places, you'll see the Wilmington Drama League. Tickets are $30 for general admission, check or cash only. And if you want to reserve tickets, you can email me at omararashada@yahoo.com. Thank you.
Okay. All right. But like we said, please come out and support this brother. He's doing good things. He's doing big things. And he's always supported us and our communities. Always. And so we want to definitely make sure that people come out to see his play. And you're only doing the one night, right?
For now, yes. Yep, one night.
Okay. All right. Well, we know that you supported it if he does another night here. Because we know there's people want to see it, you know. So let's play two. Let's play two. Okay. You know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so. But, Lynn, you got anything you want to add before we sign off?
No. You know, Omar, I just want to say, you know, thank you for coming on the show. You have always been a supporter, not just me and Dave, but, and, you know, and I'm going to specifically just say through your TV program, because you put so many people on the map, literally. Like, I don't have Comcast anymore, but when I had Comcast and I would watch your show, like, your show was always one of the ones I wanted to watch, because you know, you brought people on who I wasn't familiar with, and that was people in this area. And then two, I want to say that I think you are one of the best interviewers on Lapa. And the reason why I say that is I remember something I was promoting, and I'll just say, long story short, you were one of the only people who really asked real genuine questions. And I just say, meaning like, you did your research, you put thought into it. I went on some other shows there, like, well, here, just talk. And, you know, right. And you know, sometimes talking about what you're doing is hard, but, you know, you really had thoughtful, insightful, informational questions to ask that really, you know, you made me feel like I got my stuff out appropriately, and I'm sure a lot of other people did too. So, you know, I just thank you for what you do. And we all know some of the people who work hardest in the community get recognized the least, but, you know, I just want you to know that even, you know, we appreciate what you're doing, and, you know.
I appreciate it back. I'm glad you enjoyed being a guest as well as continuing to be future guests. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I had to add to what Leonard said, because I know your TV show, I think, was the first TV show I ever went on. I'm gonna think of it, and yeah, I went on a couple other shows after that. And Leonard's right. Sometimes they just tell you get on there and just start talking, and you know, you'd be like, well, I'm not sure what they want me to talk about. You know, you're worried that you're gonna say, you know, talk too much about one particular thing or whatever the case may be. But you always ask the questions that, you know, made us feel comfortable as far as answering those questions and so forth. And we hope that we've done the same with you tonight in making you feel comfortable, because we know this is not something that you do on a regular basis, is come on and have people interview you. So we wanted to make sure that we did it the way that you would do it for us.
I mean, it was fun. It was great. I felt very comfortable. Not nervous at all. I mean, it was wonderful. It was awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. You have been listening to News and Trends with Dave and Lynn. This is our theater edition, okay, with Mr. Omar Rashada, who definitely is somebody you guys, if you haven't heard of him, if you didn't know who to play this program back and everything. Share it with some people, and go out and see the play. You know, please go out and see the play. It is something that you will probably definitely remember after you go see it. So we need to get this play outside of Delaware, y'all. We need to get this play outside of Delaware. So you guys can make it happen by going out and seeing the play and giving them good reviews. So with that being said, we're going to say good night. And thank you once again. Tune in to our Friday weekend roundup at 6 o'clock. You know, when we always have our little fun topics and things for you guys to think about. So we really appreciate you. And good night.
Night.
Tune in next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another edition of News and Trends with your hosts, Dave and Lynn.